This is a production of Cornell University.
GPSA meeting, February 15th, 2010.
So I guess we'll get started. Welcome to the February meeting of the Voting Council of the Graduate Professional Student Association. If there is anyone here who is not normally present at a GPSA meeting, or if you haven't introduced yourself to us before and you'd like to make known who you are, please make yourself known at this time. Yes, the hand. I didn't even see. Great. Thank you for coming, Cynthia. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for coming as well. And I'd like to introduce Vice President for Planning and Budget. Is that the correct title?
Yes, Associate Vice President for Planning and Budget.
Associate Vice President for Planning and Budget, Paul Streeter, and he'll be giving our, I guess, you could say keynote address or a presentation on operational excellence and reimagining Cornell this evening. So, first item of business, this is the first meeting that I'll be initiating this, and I'll be doing it at every voting council meeting from now on. I'll be taking a roll call of the voting members simply to keep better track of who's here, and so we have an official record of that in a minute, but also so that if you may not be familiar with someone or someone's name, you can at least hear it every day. So just say present or here when I call your name. Representative Balthersky?
Here.
Representative Beekman? Unexcused. Representative Clark?
Here.
President Evanson? Here. Vice President Forrester?
Yes.
Representative Genkin?
Here.
Vice President Gutierrez?
Here.
Representative Hebner?
Here.
Representative Heckman?
Here.
Representative Mansfeld?
Yes, I will.
Representative Marugasan? Unexcused. Representative Patel? Unexcused. Representative Petraeus?
Here.
Representative Schneider? Excused. Representative Sikora? Excused. Representative Strong?
Here.
Representative Walden?
Here.
Representative Webb Binder? Excused. Representative Zhang? Unexcused. Okay. So I guess now I'd like to turn the evening over to Vice President Stewart.
Well, thank you for having me. There's two topics I was going to try to cover this evening, and you can take me in a different direction if you'd like, but the two topics I want to mention is the task force that I co-chaired around developing a new budget model for the university. I want to give you a brief overview of that, why we did it, and what we came out with, and the major elements of that. That's a part of our reimagining effort in one of the 20 task force that you've probably heard Provost Fox talk about, but we just tailed a little bit behind some of the others. So I'll give you a quick overview of that. And the other piece that I'm heavily involved with is our administrative cost savings efforts going on campus right now as part of our effort to balance the budget. And thought you might appreciate some update around that activity as well. So let me jump to the budget model task force to start with. Provost Fox charged a group of us back in June to examine the way we allocate resources on campus. Cornell is a really complex place with at least four different budget models right now. And when I use the term budget models, I'm talking about how we distribute resources to the colleges, to the academic programs, how we distribute both the revenues and how we distribute costs out. And it's what you all experience in your departments in terms of the amount of resources your departments have to work with. So when I talk budget models, that's what I'm talking about. And as I said, there's really four different major models currently on campus right now. And it's causes an awful lot of difficulties in managing the university. So Provost Fox charged a group of us to look at that and to make a recommendation to bring campus to a single budget model for the ISTA campus. We spent time from June through issuing our final report in December, and let me just give you some of the highlights of that. And again, stop me at any time if I'm sharing something or if you're confused on what I'm talking about or you have questions. So first, let me just give you the elements and the requirements that we were working under. Of course, it's to try to reach a single budget model. As I said, we've got four different budget models right now. It depends on what college you're in as to how the resources are distributed. We want to get to a single budget model. One of the requirements is that we work under developing a model that is both open, transparent budget process and information to campus. With the four different models, what we're coming from is an environment in which really nobody other than probably the office I sit in really understood how resources flow on campus. So none of the deans and the vice presidents who are really responsible for administering the major units on campus could understand the whole picture because it was so complex. So we want to get to a very open, understandable, simple, and very predictable budget model for campus. Our task force spent an awful lot of time with thinking about how resources flow to support and motivate academic excellence. We are a very decentralized university, very entrepreneurial in nature, both at the institutional level, but also at the local unit level. And we don't want to kill that spirit by any means by getting to a single budget model. So we had to think about how we allocated resources to, again, continue to enable and motivate academic excellence. Having given the experience we just went through institutionally over this last year and a half of understanding our budget problems, understanding how we got in the situation we're in and how we can protect ourselves going forward, a large part of what we talked about, we needed to make sure that what we did recommend actually had appropriate checks and balances in it. Checks and balances with the chief financial officer to make sure that as we think about resource allocation, we live within our means, that we don't go beyond our means to get into a deficit situation. Again, it goes back to the issue of transparency, that all the governing bodies, whether it be the various assemblies, the deans, the vice presidents, all the folks on campus understand what we're doing, how things are being prioritized, and how decisions are being made. So that's the framework of what we were working within in terms of a budget model. Any questions on what I'm talking about before I keep going? Now, I'm just going to jump to then the major changes for the graduate student assembly. I'm not sure if there are, so I'll take you through the major changes, just but up front, I'm not sure there's a lot of change here that probably would really affect you significantly. It's not a fundamental shift here. The fundamental shift is going on the undergraduate side. So one of the major recommendations we've made is to pool undergraduate tuition. Right now, undergraduate tuition flows in several different ways on campus. If you're in the hotel school, the undergraduate tuition flows right to the dean of the hotel school. If you sit in one of the contract colleges, Cal's Community College or ILR in terms of undergraduate colleges, the tuition flows right to those deans. So if they enroll a student, they get the tuition and they pay the resulting financial aid bill. If you sit in architecture, art and planning, arts and sciences, or engineering, both the tuition and the financial aid bill is owned by the provost. The provost receives those resources, receives a lot of other resources, and decides on how much to give out to the deans in an allocated process. And what our task force recommended is that we pool all that undergraduate tuition so that it comes into a single pot, and then based on a predefined set of criteria, that money would then get distributed out to the colleges, looking at where students are enrolled, where students are taught, the cost of education, because that does vary across disciplines, quality factors, prioritization factors, things of that sort. So it's a big shift in terms of the initial flow of monies, and in some ways, who gets to really control some of that. Right now, the controls come in kind of a backhanded way. This would be much more overt and clear. So that's a big change we're making or recommending. And if that gets adopted, that, again, will be a significant change on the undergraduate side. We don't think it actually will change the undergraduate experience. We're doing it. As I said, academic excellence was one of our driving considerations. We think that this action will actually enhance and over the long term really enhance the undergraduate experience for students here, because it really then recognizes all undergraduates, it recognizes the institutional responsibility to educate all undergraduates. And the difference why we're really talking about undergraduate education, because we do view that as much more of a shared institutional responsibility than professional and graduate education, in which the programs are a bit more focused within your respective areas and graduate fields and programs.
And how does the tuition for the graduate school work?
Yep, so let me describe the professional schools first. For the professional schools, so that being, when I say that, I'm using the term around VET, law, and the Johnson School. For a budget model standpoint, that's where I use that term. The tuition revenues for those schools right now flow to those colleges directly, so we enroll the students to get the tuition. For the graduate school, any degree program administered through the graduate school, the tuition actually flows depending on where the home of the student's committee advisor is. So where your committee chair is. If you've got your committee chair is in a contract college or is in CALS, the tuition flows to CALS. If your committee chair is in architecture, art and planning, arts and sciences, or engineering, the tuition actually flows to the provost. They're in a bucket of colleges we call the general purpose colleges, and the provost retains all those revenues. What we would suggest, what we are recommending going forward, is that even for the graduate programs, that the tuition flows to the college of the committee chair. So that's really how we base the college of enrollment, is based on committee chairs, the home college of the committee chair, and we are recommending that the tuition flows down that same path that follows where where graduate students are enrolled.
And it's, why the difference from the undergrad? Why not the change? Then
why not do it?
Yeah.
Again, our view on for both professional and graduate school programs, that we view the programs as not quite as a shared responsibility across campus, that there isn't as much cross college teaching and as much movement, that they tend to, our view was that the programs tend to be more focused within disciplines. Some of those disciplines certainly cross college, but across all the graduate fields, the majority of them are still primarily single college based. So that's the predominant reason. One of our major themes was again to treat similar revenues and similar expenses in a common manner. Right now we treat several different revenues in a different manner depending on whether you sit in a contract college in one of the professional schools or whether you sit in a general purpose college, and our budget model recommendation was to treat both revenues and expenses based on the nature of the expense, not based on the nature of the college or the funding framework of the college that it belongs in. So I won't bore you with the details on that, but that's a big theme for us, is to treat like costs in a like manner, because we don't do that right now. We think it will actually simplify many aspects of our budget modeling. Another major element of what we're recommending is we considered the budget model and this tension between working in a very distributed environment and distributing resources out to the colleges versus how much resource should stay at the center for use by the provost for institutional initiatives. And as we talk to other schools that have recently or in the last few years looked at different budget models, we were cautioned strongly about making sure that we did not starve the center of resources, that the provost does need to have money to be able to advance advance the institution as a whole forward. So one of the things we're recommending is something we call the University Support Pool, which is a mechanism in which the provost would have resources available to him or her for discretionary investment. Some of it might be underwriting some of our programs that just don't have sufficient resources to make it on their own, so some of it would be a subsidy. But other pieces of it would be to advance whatever priorities are for the provost at that time. And the way this support pool would be formed would be by taxing various revenue streams as revenues come in. So as tuition comes in to the institution, we would take a piece of it, and we in our task force did not recommend specific taxation rates, assessment rates. It's something for a further study of it at the implementation phase, but the framework of it is that revenue streams would get taxed and for a contribution into the institutional pool. If you will, almost think about it as almost a franchise tax for being part of the university. There's a contribution to support the greater good, and that would be this pool. Yes, sir.
One thing I don't really understand is the difference between that tax rate and current grant overhead rate. How does that
comply
with the cost recovery efforts? You know, if people are being billed in addition to overhead taxes, how does that work?
Yep.
Especially with regard to things like shared facilities like the NanoBio Tech Center or the Supercomputer Research or the BRL. Things that are shared grant resources, if it's part of overhead and cost recovery taxing,
yep, it's a great question. Let me see, they're really two separate things, so let me separate the two. When you're talking about shared institutional costs or cost recovery, and particularly overhead on grants and contracts, so that overhead on grants and contracts represent a bucket of costs we call facilities and administrative costs. From the facilities costs, it's the depreciation of a building, it's the utilities, it's the building care, the maintenance costs around a building. And on administrative costs, it's for just the overhead of running the university. Offices like mine, my overhead, you know, the budget function, the controller's office, human resources, et cetera. Those kind of administrative operations are all part of, you know, institutional overhead. And the federal regulations allow us to recover a piece of that on grants and contracts. So that's what gets distributed out. We also have an internal cost distribution process for distributing these costs across campus. Those two cost distributions, which are a matter of recovering these costs, my office doesn't generate any revenue. I'm purely a cost center. It's got to be paid by someone, and it's kind of lining up these costs with the revenues. That's one activity. What I was referring to when I was talking about the university support pool is much different. It's really just an assessment. It's a contribution of revenue to advance the institution, nothing to do with cost recovery. Now, we wouldn't take that on grants and contracts. We couldn't do that again. So it's going to be on select revenues, select unrestricted revenues. So I apologize for not making that really clear.
Thank you.
But it's on unrestricted revenues.
But for example, you mentioned possibly having a tax on tuition. That would be one example to create this revenue stream. Now, would that just be on the undergraduate tuition, or would that be on the graduate tuition so that the university support pool could apply to graduate needs as well?
It would be on everything. With graduate school tuition, so I'm going to differentiate, and I hope this is meaningful to you, but for me, I think about it in three buckets around tuition. The undergraduate tuition, the professional school tuition, and then the graduate school tuition. Much of the graduate school tuition is a non-cash transaction. If you're on fellowships or assistantships and funds in which, you know, tuition is in many respects waived, there's no cash activity to actually tax, if you will. So what we're really talking about when we talk about this taxation is actually on real cash coming in the institution. But the notion on it would be that all academic programs would be eligible for support out of the pool. And it wouldn't necessarily be a line that only undergraduate tax could go to undergraduate colleges. It's really trying to take an assessment against unrestricted revenues, put it in this pot for the greater good of the university, and whatever that might mean. It might mean graduate, it might mean undergraduate, it might mean student life experience, et cetera. Yes, sir.
Has it been discussed how the funds from the university support pool will be dispersed, or is it completely on the sole judgment of the provost?
The process on it is to be defined. What our task force recommended that there be an advisory group established that would have broad representation of campus. So the exact makeup of that hasn't been determined. We're recommending that it be a broad group that is established. Part of our process recommendations is that support pool be clearly identified. People know who's contributing what to it, and then what the uses are coming out of that. And so that be a very explicit part of our annual budget planning and our annual reporting to campus of how resources are being used. So the process on how, you know, in the end it would be a provost decision, but we're expecting and hoping that there would be an advisory process along the way of how folks can, you know, unit programs can actually seek funding, what the criteria of how things are getting, you know, prioritized, and what ultimately those decisions are. So our expectation in our recommendations would that be a very, you know, open, transparent process with a full reporting out to campus annually. sizing that support pool is again something that would need detailed modeling. But what we are, you know, estimating that should probably be in the range of about 10 to 15% of unrestricted revenue. So to put that in perspective for the other campus, that's probably about $125 to $150 million right now. And just to kind of put the full thing, let's say that number is $125 million. The provost already probably has monies that directly accrue to him through current budget process of about $60 to $70 million. So this assessment, this taxation, isn't for the full amount. If that helps you. Yes, sir.
If the provost does not spend all of the Google money, does it carry over the next year to redistribute it across the college?
No, it would carry over. So the notion, again, is to make long-term investments. Some of it could be seed money, you know, for a 2-3 year period, 5 year period, whatever it might be. Some of it could be, you know, recurring investments. But the notion on it is, you know, over the long haul, it would get, you know, pushed back out and invested in campus. But on any given year, that wouldn't necessarily be a requirement. All right?
Yeah, no, just get your... Any more points, or?
No, I was going to move on to the next topic, if you would like. So I'm going to then jump into the administrative cost savings for a few moments and describe what's going on there. So as part of our reimagining effort, there have been 20 task force reports out there that have really been in the academic realm, plus this budget model I just described. You've probably heard about the strategic planning effort that Professor Lawler is leading with the provost. What I'm talking about is this effort called administrative cost savings, which our focus is really about identifying cost savings opportunities to balance the budget as far away from the academic program as you can. And so when I use this term administrative, it's everything that's non-academic. We're looking at the areas we're looking at include procurement, so how we buy goods and services, how we select vendors, how we negotiate pricing with vendors. We actually think there's a rich opportunity there to achieve some significant cost savings. So procurement in the facilities area, how we, you know, conduct our business, maintain buildings, how we look at our energy costs, what energy conservation opportunities are out there that we could aggressively pursue. The IT arena, how we deliver IT support to campus, how we do applications development. HR services, financial management, financial transaction processing services, and then just how we organize support throughout campus. But it's all around support activities. Our objective is to achieve $90 million of savings. Why we're doing this? We're still sitting with a significant budget deficit. Our current budget deficit for this year, what the trustees approved, was for us to operate this year with a $68 million deficit. As the year's progressing, we're beating that we're forecasting that we'll beat it by a few million dollars, but the scale is a $68 million deficit. If we took no action, we just let tuition go up the way it was planned, we let the endowment payout go down the way the trustees have approved it, the trustees have approved a reduction in our endowment payout. So if we took no action across all our financial activities, our $68 million deficit would grow to around $85, $87 million next year. We're going to probably lose about $18 to $20 million of support from New York State. As I mentioned, the trustees, upon our recommendation, but have authorized us to reduce the amount that we draw from the endowment, so it's less resources we have available, and we've done that because the endowment took such a large hit last year. It lost so much value that we need to control our spending from that. So tuition's going up, but these other large actions are working against us. But as I said, if we take no action, our budget deficit actually goes from $68 million back up to about $85 million. Had we taken no action this year, our budget deficit would have exceeded $115 million. For the current year. So last year we took about $50 million of budget reductions across campus. That's what got us to where we're at, but we're by no means out of the woods. Yes, sir?
So from your current discussion, it sounds like you're looking for things with a really quick payoff period, but if you're talking about things like energy payments and redoing procurement systems, what is your payoff period for this? We've got to come on the end of
it. Right. Right. So what we're looking at, the timeline for balancing the budget, getting back into financial equilibrium, we're trying to do that in about a 4 to 5 year period. So that gives us some time. That most of our energy conservation, our utilities folks who study this, believe that much of it has a 3 year payback on it. And there are some actions, even looking at the controls over ventilation and laboratory space, for example. There's some issues of just, we probably could do with a short-term investment of just putting more focused effort, some staff effort on studying, you know, lab space and adjusting the controls without any major capital investment, which would have that payback. I've seen some projects suggested that I even have a 6 month payback on it. So we're trying to prioritize those needs. Procurement savings, where we think the biggest savings opportunities are, probably had to take at least a couple years to roll in because there's some systems requirements underneath that. So we are trying to, you know, our goal is not to get to zero next year. Trustees aren't requiring us to. But we do, you know, our goal is to get down probably in the low 30s next year. So we've got another major adjustment to make. And we're trying to get as much of it as we can out of these administrative cost savings areas. So we have an effort launched right now. We've got is the areas I just mentioned, procurement, facilities, IT, et cetera. We've formed initiative teams in each of those areas. They're aggressively studying, you know, what are the potential savings opportunities. They'll be reporting out in a few weeks. We have yet to actually administer budget reductions to individual colleges because we're waiting to see what we learn and what we think we can actually achieve next year through these efforts just to minimize the other impact. But so this effort's underway right now. And as I said, it will be a multi-year effort. To your question, it is a multi-year effort. But we do need to be progressing, you know, towards financial equilibrium. As I said, if we did nothing, we'll be going in the other direction. We wouldn't stay at status quo at $68 million. So, again, I'll stop there, but I'm certainly glad to answer any questions about any of it, if there are any. Yes, sir.
I wanted to ask about the tuition rates, first of all, for graduate students. Some of the reporting I've seen has suggested that graduate student tuition rates are not increasing, whereas undergraduate tuition rates are. And I'm wondering, from your office's perspective, does that seem like the wise trajectory or that outside of budget and planning?
No, it is from within our office. I can address that. So we do think... again, to differentiate, when the rates that are not changing are the rates for graduate students under the umbrella of the graduate, all programs within the graduate school. And as I mentioned, much of that that tuition is actually not cash transactions. So students aren't necessarily paying, or there's not an external sponsor paying it, except for those places in which the tuition is covered by a grant or a contract. And in that, you know, at a federal award. So in that arena, our typical process is that if a student is being supported off of a federal contract, we typically receive half the tuition from the federal government. So when you narrow it down and say, how much money are we actually giving up by not increasing it, it's on a relatively small population. And from the faculty perspective, there are concerns that we actually aren't as competitive as we should be in the federal arena. If we keep increasing our tuition, we won't be competitive. We actually were on a path until the budget crisis hit last year. We had been 1 year in to what was expected to be a four-year program to actually take the... There's two rates right now, a high-end rate, which is $29,000 or $29,500. I don't remember the exact amount. But it's around that, down to $20,000. We wanted to get to a single rate, and our goal was to bring it down to the lowest rate, and thereby, you know, hopefully making ourselves more competitive in the federal research arena. So we had been 1 year in on a four-year implementation plan that we've essentially suspended. We suspended it last year. We suspended it again this year. So we actually wish we were taking it down, I think would be what the graduate school would be promoting, the dean of the graduate school, and what folks in our research arena would be arguing that we should be taking it down. And the best we think we can do right now is to hold it flat.
Just one other question that occurred to me from the presentation was, in the budget report, they talk about the risk that this new budget model may undercut some of the savings expected from these non-academic cost units. Since you just presented on both of those, could you elaborate a little more on what those risks are?
Sure. So it's a great point, and it was an issue we were concerned with. we're a very decentralized institution. So when I use the word IT support or facility support or finance support, when we think about that across campus, we have a central office over each of those areas, but we have those areas played out in each of the colleges. And how much money an individual college invests in HR activity, for example, or IT activity, right now is really a choice of that college. And it varies based on the resources of the college, the priorities of, you know, the folks in that college. And so what we're worried about is, you know, you take a given function, you have lots of different decision makers across that function, and to get real efficiency, you can't have lots of different decision makers. We've really got to get to a common process. So we're using the term much, probably more things will become more centrally led. Doesn't mean centrally controlled, but centrally led in terms of defining common processes. And our concern from the budget model standpoint is that when we put resources out into the hands of individual units and we leave them with the discretion on how to spend it, you run the risk of us still having a chaotic environment out there, people investing differentially in these functions. And so we just need to protect for that chaos. We don't think that's really a budget model. We think the budget model kind of raises the risk, but it's really a management issue of understanding how much we're putting in these functions, make sure we're talking about it actively and managing for it. So without the management piece of it, of actually managing these functions holistically, chaos results. So it's not necessarily a budget model issue, but the budget model puts the resources out there, so chaos could result if we weren't managing it. Does that make sense?
Perhaps one more question?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I just have a little confusion, sort of. This might not be actually your strength or your field that you're talking about, but in terms of TA-ships, I know that the curriculum, the other task forces have suggested that the curriculum needs to be changed so there's less overlap and different things like that. But with the curriculum changing, do you expect that to affect the scholarship money for graduate school, for example? Because that's not actually hard income that you're advocating, because in that case, the fee is waived, right?
There is a fee, right, it is waived right now. And really the cost, if you will, the real cost, is really related to the stipend component of the
school. So do you anticipate any sort of decrease of that pool for future providing stipends to graduate students?
So from an institutional standpoint, I'd say no. Within individual colleges or programs, because the budget reductions are going to hit differentially, so I would suspect that there will be some tightening around that. Is an institutional perspective, the reason why we're going through this whole administrative cost saving is to protect student support. It is one element of the academic program. So from our standpoint, it's not a strategic direction we're trying to take. We're actually trying to protect away from that. So I just want to mislead. Individual units are going to face their own budget pressures, so you could see some reduction in that manner. But my guess, it will be more isolated or spotty or whatever the right word is on it. It definitely won't be an institutional direction. As I said, everything we're doing is trying to protect against that.
And in that case, the support funding that you said, you mentioned earlier, could help go towards that in the provost? Or
could, yeah. Yeah. Particularly if there was a greater emphasis wanted to be put in a certain area, you know, wanting to advance this in a certain manner. I could see exactly that kind of thing. Yep.
I think that's all the time we have.
Okay.
But thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so moving on to the next business of the meeting. First, I would like to ask the clerk to amend our roll call as to indicate that Representatives Maruga-san and Representative Zhang are in attendance. Thank you. Next on our agenda, we have approval of the minutes. I would look favorably upon a motion of some sort related to that.
I'm not sure the correct procedure, but I have an amendment to offer.
Sure.
On page 4, I ask that the cinema denominalize any survey results or attendance rates. In fact, I intended to say anonymize.
Okay.
Not just take the name off, but actually remove identifying information.
Okay. I will make that note. We would normally make it on the screen, but it's a little technical situation tonight. So, anonymize. Does anyone have a problem with that change? Seeing none, are there any motions on the floor at this time?
Motion to approve the minutes with the said amendments.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent? Seeing none, the minutes will be approved as amended. Now we have executive updates. My only update is related to the NAGPS. At last meeting, I discussed the possibility of the Cornell GPSA becoming a member of the National NAGPS, National Association of Graduate and Professional Students. We had a little discussion on that at the last meeting. It seemed that there wasn't any interest either way in following it up. So I'm going to recommend that we simply lay the issue of joining the National Association of Graduate and Professional Students on the table, and I would recommend that I'll recommend to the executive committee next year that they take that up. Does that sound good? Okay. Didn't hear any strong opinions either way, so I thought that was the best plan of action. Erica, executive vice president update?
Yes, I just have one update. We set the date for town hall on March 1st. That's the next advisory body meeting. Preston Mansfeld will be mostly responsible for organizing that as the advocacy committee chair, and Streech will be promoting. We've started promoting it on Facebook, and then if we're going to incorporate the GCI into that and try and get new feedback from graduates to incorporate the GCI. That's my only update.
Just if you can give a brief synopsis, or if anyone here wants to, we use the phrase as town hall and GCI, and is everyone familiar with what we're talking about when we say it's a town hall, the town hall meeting and the GCI? Maybe we could just run through that quickly. Mm-hmm. So, Creston, do you want to say what the town hall meeting is?
The town hall meeting is a town hall format where we invite all graduate students and administrators from that are actually within the graduate community initiative at this time, which is the GCI, to come and discuss about how the graduate student body is going to go forward with addressing our needs with this whole rejuvenation of Cornell.
Great.
More about the town hall program, so we come and yell about Medicare.
Thank you, Captain. Mike, do you want to say, give us 1 minute or less on the GCR?
Sure. The Graduate Community Initiative, or what was called at the time, the proposal for Graduate Community Initiative, was about a 17-page document that was written by the 2006-2007 Graduate Professional Student Assembly that basically outlined the needs and desires of the graduate students and graduate professional students here at Cornell as they want to see their role in the university broaden in the future. It brought up a number of issues pertaining to graduate and professional student life, specifically a call for a bigger and better graduate and professional student center, improved campus housing, improved child care services, a graduate resource center, a graduate career office or improvements to the graduate career services offerings. And it was a document that had some momentum for a little while, but then the financial crisis hit and everyone moved on to other things. So I'm glad to see that we're continuing to talk about it.
Thanks, Mike.
Career services working group is still
going. Yes. Yeah. There are some things that have gone really well. Career services people.
Thank you, Mike and Brenda. Executive or Vice President for Operations updates?
Then posted an announcement that during spring break called alternative breaks, and they're looking for graduate students who are going to drive to Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and I think West Virginia was the other one. If you're interested in that, I encourage you to read what Ben posted, and there are some perks for graduate students doing that. I think they pay for your any expenses you have, they come to you. So they just need someone who was going to forfeit their spring break and not go to Cancun and drive them down. And it's for undergraduates doing some different types of service projects, working with different programs and that sort of thing.
I think there's probably a requirement that you be VAM certified. There's a course that a graduate student can go through to obtain that certification. You should have all received an email from me as well with the specifics on this and the individual, the undergraduate student to contact if anyone in your field is interested in this. If you did not receive that information, you can see me afterward. Anything else, Brian?
We'll put up tonight's PowerPoint tomorrow. So you can see what was supposed to be shown, but that's it for me.
All right. Thanks, Brian. Now we have standing committee updates. I'd like to insert in here an update from Mike Denkin on the ad hoc committee on the survey. If you have any update for us.
I do. I explored some options in terms of perhaps piggybacking the committee on other surveys that the university is doing. And it doesn't look like that's a realistic option. The graduate student survey is that's apparently every 5 years, and it's not until 2014 when they're doing the next survey. The health survey, they have a very split format in terms of how they want questions, so that doesn't seem like a viable option either. So we may wind up asking for some money from the UESA as far as incentivizing the graduate students.
Vice President Forrest?
So my conversation with Tim Marshall from Gannett, he did say that the beginning part of the survey was standardized, but there was the they were considering the option of having like the last page more for graduate students stuff. Did you speak to Tim about that?
He said that there are questions that are standardized, so to keep in mind in case they want to share something with your content.
That's
weird.
Well, I'm seeing him tomorrow, so we can.
Okay. Yeah, if we could just check further on that.
Yeah.
And since we sort of entered in the middle of that discussion, we do have some new members and some individuals that may have not been here at the previous meeting. Mike, just 1 minute on why we're doing this survey, why your committee exists, the purpose.
So the rationale is to get better information on consumption of services that GPSA funded groups provision. So we want to make sure we have better, more informed data. We're collecting information ourselves rather than being dependent upon the groups to provide that information. And it's just kind of to make better, more informed decisions. And to get this information from the representative body of students.
Great, thanks. And this came out at the Ivy Summit that we had with all the other student governments from all the other Ivy League schools earlier this year, as well as from our discussions last semester during the student activity fee talk. So thanks for working on that, Mike. Now, standing committee updates. Do we have something from advocacy? Cressman.
We're preparing for the town hall meeting, so we're gathering bullet points to summarize the GCI that will be available for all members to read through. We're also going to be surveying students as they enter in order to determine if there is any additional aspects of professional student life that they would like to see within the revamped version of what we will be presenting at the GCI maybe this year or next year.
Very good. Finance Commission is, Asha was unable to make it tonight. She got stuck in White Plains. I feel for her. But we have events. Swish, do you have an update?
So events, grad ball is April 23rd. So keep that date in mind. I'm going to be sending out an email over Facebook just so people know that that's when we're going to have it. More details to follow, obviously, as we're going to plan it. This weekend on February 20th, we have a fundraiser for Haiti. It's just a party. Please show up. $5 cover. All the details are on Facebook, and I will send you that link. Sometimes.
Is it known yet where Brad Ball will be called?
Same place. Memorial Hall of the Children's Trade. So we'll have that whole floor. Last year.
Any other questions for Srish or any other comments? Seeing none, we'll move into the, legislative portion of this meeting. We have some proposed charter amendments that were heard at the last GPSA meeting, so they would be up for a vote, if appropriate, decided so by this body at this meeting. We have, first on our agenda, R6, Increased Collaboration with Cornell Cinema, sponsored by Vice President Forrester. Would you like to...
So this is the same resolution that I presented at the last meeting. There were no changes to it made. Basically, again, it's in response to the amount of response there was to Cornell Cinema's allocation during last fall setting up the activity fee. So basically, the resolution requests that two additional statements be made under the Cornell Cinema clause and the eligibility criteria and obligations for byline funded groups, one asking for a seat on the advisory body for a representative of the GPSA, and second for Cinema to come up with a better way for telling us exactly how many people attend Cinema events.
Seeing that we have a representative from Cornell Cinema here, would you like to comment on this proposed resolution also?
I certainly have to answer any questions. I don't have any real comments. I don't have any problem with the amendment or this
transfer. Okay. Thank you, sir. I guess we'll move into formal debate then, or move out of formal debate into general debate on this resolution. So are there any points or motions on the floor at this time? Any questions? For either sponsor of the motion or for Cornell Cinema.
What about permission?
Yeah.
I was curious if Cornell Cinema has made any preparations to comply with some of these amendments to our charter. So, for instance, like how are they going to handle the surveying or anything like that for coming in?
I was hoping that once the representative from the GPSA was identified and they started meeting with Cinema, that detail would be worked out then and reported back to the GPSA. You know, I think the representative is the first step, and then we go into, you know, how can we work with them to be attendance.
Do you have anything else there?
Sure. I guess in my mind, the two possible best ways of doing this would be to occasionally for periods of a week or two, maybe a month, ask people as they come to the box office whether they're undergraduate or graduate students and give them tickets or ticket rolls. This would be the less technologically advanced way of doing it. There's a very real possibility that that next year, next fiscal year, we're going to have a different ticket price for undergraduates and graduate students, and this will mean we'll have to have an actual way of scanning cards. We'll have, as we had back a number of years ago, hard data about whether the students, how many graduate students versus undergraduate students, based on that. I don't think you're looking at anything that's going to record every ID number that comes through, but something that will separate out either permanently if we do have separate ticket prices or on a regular basis surveys. That's just my thought at this point. It has to be obviously gone to be
Thank you, sir. Any other questions or points on the floor? Motions? Representative Mansfield? That's in order at this time. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we will now move into voting on the main motion. Does the sponsor have a final sponsorship speech or anything?
No.
Okay. Seeing none, we will now vote on this charter amendment, or it has the same weight as a charter amendment. It's an amendment to
the eligibility criteria.
It's a separate document, but considered to be part of the charter. Please raise your placards if you are voting in the affirmative. Vice President Forrest, to account.
11.
11 favor. Any in opposition?
No.
0. Any abstaining? 1. Passes 11-0-1. Excellent. Next order of business is Resolution R7 regarding the representation of graduate students at the Geneva Experimental Station to the Cornell Graduate and Professional Student Assembly. The sponsor for this motion is present. That's Vice President Forrester. Would you care to speak on the motion? I believe it's been updated.
Yeah.
And thank you to the representative from Cornell Cinema for joining us. Thank you, Chris.
So based on the discussion we had last time regarding this resolution, which basically asked that within the charter a statement be made that a seat on the advisory body be allocated to a student from the Geneva Experimental Station. From that discussion, there were two amendments that I made to the resolution. Now I represent it to you. The first one is the second whereas statement, where I identify what the fields are in Geneva. So that's food science, horticulture, entomology, and plant pathology. Those fields are also present here in the Ithaca campus. And the second is a reworking of the additional statement I would like to put into the charter regarding the GPSA membership. It's involved. The main thing is now the new second sentence, which was worked on with myself and Tom Bartaszewski, who's now an additional sponsor for the resolution, stating that the seat may not be held by a person already holding a seat from another seat. With that, I'll stop and take questions.
Any questions for Brian on the motion?
Is this increasing the size of your board?
No, because currently there is already someone from Geneva who attends our meetings, but nowhere in the charter does it even mention Geneva, so we're not up to that.
Any other questions for Brian? Seeing none, seeing that we're still informal debate on the main motion, is there anyone who wishes to speak in opposition to the main motion? Seeing none, moving to general debate. Are there any points or motions on the floor of the Senate? Representative Heffman.
I'm not sure if it's in order at this point, but I would move that we table this resolution pending further discussion of membership changes and representative changes, especially with conversations happening later. So I move that we postpone this resolution indefinitely.
That would be in order at this time to make that motion. I guess I'll give the sponsor of the main motion a chance to speak on his feelings on that.
You're welcome to make the motion.
Okay.
I don't think we should, but you are welcome to that.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor to lay this on the table. Is there a second?
Nothing.
Seconded? So if you're in favor of laying this on the table to take it up at a future point in the semester, please raise your placards. And if not, we will continue debating this and possibly voting on this main motion tonight. So those in favor? Three. Those in opposition? We will continue with general debate on the main motion. Are there any points?
Point of order.
Yeah.
With the three members, if they go negative, the bill won't pass. Because we won't meet the requirement of the GSA to be here in
the
joint body.
That would take
both. That was just a vote to lay on the table.
Correct.
Yeah.
Warning.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's how many members do we have here at the moment? Is that, I mean, are you saying because of the number of people present?
Mike accepts out the question.
Okay.
Motion to postpone our 7 until Michael comes back.
No, I don't.
Michael's going for the evening. He told me he had to leave early. Let me just count for a second. We have 13 voting members here now. One of our voting members currently, based on the designation of the charter, is not considered seated. Representative Beekman has missed enough unexcused absences that he's not considered a seated member at the moment. So we would need, what's 2/3 of 18, someone? 12? Yeah, exactly. So we would need 12 members to vote. Yeah.
I think we've done the last one, yeah.
Motion to reconsider the vote, so I'll vote in favor of it. Is motion?
I'll second that motion.
Okay. Is there any opposition? Reconsider the vote with me voting in favor of the last motion. Any opposition? Okay, fine. So it passed 12 to 0 to 1. Very good. Okay, so we're continuing in general debate on the main motion R7. Are there any points or motions on the floor at this time?
I think the reason we should pass this now is that we got Vera who's coming to our meeting,
and we actually have someone else too, and I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I can't think of anything either. But the point is that we want, I think, welcome the members from our various affiliate departments and stations. And, you know, of course, constitutions change faster than, you know, the weather around here, so I don't think delaying it just because it might change things a couple months is our best course of action. I think we better recognize the era and, you know, show our support to coming to all these meetings. I think that's the spirit.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Walterski? Seeing none, any other points or motions on the floor?
Point of information.
Sure.
To what discussion was Representative Kantner referring to previously?
So I'll be speaking later about perhaps some need to restructure. Later on in this meeting, I'll be speaking about perhaps some need to restructure the format.
Additionally, isn't there a resolution that's been demanded for changing, or you brought up the idea of changing the number of representatives?
Yeah, there'll be a discussion about that.
So there is a previous discussion
yes.
as well.
Oh, yeah, at the Land Voting Council meeting, perhaps you remember there was some discussion about restructuring the membership.
I don't believe
that
was
present
for that.
Okay. Okay, very good. Any other points or motions on the floor this time?
Information?
Yeah.
I was just wondering if there's a multiple fields in the Geneva experiment station, and how are they going to select or vote?
I'll let the Vice President answer that.
The fields that I've listed in the resolution are the only four fields in Geneva, and as for the voting, that is left up to them, because currently, if you look at the rest of that section, how GPSA members are selected, that's up to the fields, whether it's the fields group that votes, or it's up to the Director of Graduate Studies. So we intentionally left that out too, because if we're defining how Geneva should pick, you know, why are we putting that pressure on them, and other fields could just pick a seat too. So
it's basically up to the four fields there.
It's up to the students in Geneva. How they have from there, that's how they want to decide who they're at.
And how many grad students?
It varies, so the range is from 25 up to possible 90. It's not constant, because
people come and go.
Any other points or motions?
Motion to close debate and move to a vote.
That's in order at this time. Is there a second? Please raise your placards if you are in favor of the motion of closing debate. All right. We will, I guess, do you have any sponsorship closing speech you'd like to offer?
No, I like how Tom said this, that, you know, students from Geneva have been driving down an hour to come to our meetings, and it would be nice if we welcome them in some way, you know, in the charter saying that they are welcome to attend, you know. An hour drive both ways, so, you know, it would be nice if, you know, we showed them our support, and it's another way for us to promote our collaboration between the Ithaca campus and the Geneva campus.
All right. Thank you, Vice President Forster. We'll now move into voting on the main motion. As Representative Mansell pointed out, we need at least 12 votes in favor for this this resolution to pass. Those in favor of the main motion, please raise your placards. Yes. I'll hold it for now. I'll vote. Okay. 10 in favor. Those voting in opposition? 2 against? Those in absentia? 1. The charter amendment does not pass at a vote of 10-2-1. It can be brought up later in the semester if deemed so fitting. So the next item on the agenda for this evening is approval of the Big Red Barn rejuvenation proposal. Vice President Forster is the sponsor of this motion, I believe. Michi? Is that? Yeah. Is that who you pronounce it, Michi?
Michi.
Okay, fine. So if you two together would like to.
Do you
want to
start?
Everything I wanted to say
is on
the proposal.
So you say, sir, could you say, just explain why the proposal is great and then what you'd like from the future of that?
Well, basically what we like to do, well, if you come here often enough, you can see there are a lot of awareness here. And if you especially come here for TGIF, you can see how crowded this place can be. And example, like right now, I can even tell this issue is actually blocking your filing. Like, you're not really supposed to have anything blocking you, like 2 feet away from the door. I mean, this kind of thing is really, it's not really critical at this point, but it can be critical when we're gonna, when we start having fire, so we have too many people around. It's just not big enough to hold more than 165 people. The maximum people we can hold in this building is 165. That's for legal issues. But if you count TGIF, we stop counting how many people coming. Just because we are afraid it's going to be more than 165 people every time, every Friday after, you know, in the evening. And also the heating system here is not really good. You can hear sometimes the pipes crunking and making a lot of noise. We fixed that, but we don't even know whether it comes back again. If it comes back, we have to fix it. But I don't know how we can keep doing all this fixing, having problems, all these things. And in 5 years, we were told there's a 5-year plan to actually extend this building. But because of the financial crisis last year and the last 2 years, we don't really know how it's going to happen and when it's going to happen. And we would really like to promote and initiate rebuilding or renovation of this place by ourselves, by asking people who used to come here, the professional and the grad students who graduated here and used to come here to have coffee, popcorn, or even a dollar beer, or just pass by for international coffee hours. But we all appreciate this very cozy, not too big, but not too small, too small for TGI, but not small to enjoy like evening studying or just having coffee. So I was asking, or I'm asking DPSA for us to go down to ask grad alums to donate money to rebuild our degree barn. So that's the bottom. I don't know. I'm sorry. I cannot really explain.
Well, so Mitch is asking for the Mitch is not asking the GPSA for money for this, by the way.
No.
Mitch is asking for the GPSA to approve the proposal that has been attached to the resolution, so that when herself and members, the students of the Big Red Barn, go to the graduate school or to the alumni and development office and present this proposal, she can say that the GPSA has looked at it and has commented on it. With that, I'll stop.
Are there any questions for Brian or Mitch? Yes.
Is there any idea about how much people desire to put accessibility?
How we don't really know yet. It's also the part of the proposal. I think I like to really promote the idea of extending or renovating the barn by ourselves. So we don't really know how much we can get from the alumni. Maybe a couple million dollars, at least $1 million to extend. But we like to have this place intact. Need to extend, but have the whole feeling of a big red barn as is. And we like to also add as grad engineering students, architecture students, to actually come up with some ideas. We can actually have the director of the bar and the grad office, they can have a blueprint, the criteria, okay, this is why we have to remain. We have to keep at the barn to feel like the barn, like 100 years ago and now. But where we have to extend and how we extend can be really up to whoever, you know, come up with the design. Innovative or more traditional, it's really up to how they like it. But I think so we can actually feel like, okay, when we come back in 5-10 years later, we actually had this barn like this, and 10 years later, look what we did, keep it up a little bit, you know, for something better. By ourselves.
Representative Clark?
Question, can you comment, about the issues with fences of the barn and the roof and everything? My understanding is that the barn itself is sometime in the not too future when the building will be constructed on down. Is that the case? Or, I mean, the rumors always fly around. I know the fact that we've been here for the better part of a year, a few years ago, because of the structural problems.
Basically, the roof was fixed last year. Any of you that were here, you'll remember there was an emergency closure because of the way the stove was glass. They fixed the roof. They guaranteed it'd be good for 20 to 30 years. But in the architectural and engineering report that came out of that, they said they would not attest to the soundness of any of the other systems or structures, and that the barn was going to have to be closed within a five-year period to do those assessments. So we're now looking probably 3 years out that the barn would actually have to be closed.
For the assessment or for good?
Because they have to do the assessment to assure its safety. Structural integrity of the walls, for example, has been called into question. The electrical system is really out of date. They did just do a revamp of the heating system, but it's not guaranteed for any particular amount of time. This is something that was on the docket. I don't know where you got the five-year time frame. It was on the docket for central facilities to do further investigation to cost out what repairs would cost. No major renovation or expansion of the barn has ever been looked at. But it is very timely that, now is the time something needs to happen if the barn is going to continue to operate as a professional student center. Word of caution, perhaps, as well, is that it is not owned or operated by graduate students or even by the graduate school, per se. It is a university facility, and so it could be reassigned to a different purpose as well.
That was my concern, that before we think of expansion, whether the main building itself will survive the city review and the second classroom, whether it'll live within 3 years. I mean, if you go to the next extension and then the main part of the barn can't function as it does because you do have that to say about it. And, I mean, I'm fully supportive of the local stand. I'm concerned about whether it should be an expansion or whether this would go up to a barn itself and get a single health company here.
Well, if
we
can expand, obviously we're going to reinforce all these weaknesses to the barn. Is that the concern? That you really just too much snow falling to the roof? There's not going to be extension or expansion of the barn without reinforcing the whole building. We just don't find the extension.
Yes.
I have a
better
proposal, but
the
question is fixing of the building. I mean, maybe that would be a good way to sell it because, there's no point adding on our service for a fee if the main barn can fall down.
I can definitely add that. I thought that that was already given in the proposal because, without saying that, without fixing the problems, issues of the barn or this building, there's no way we can expand because if you break, let's say, this wall, it may gonna just collapse to the other side of the building. So the whole assessment of the building is the priority and it has to be done first before even doing any expansion.
Representative Heckman, did you have one?
Point of procedure, are we in formal debate right now? Can I speak for
Let's move into general debate. Would you like to speak in favor or against the motion?
I'd like to speak in favor.
Please.
It seems like that there are a lot of questions about what the future of the barn is and what our role is in the future of the barn as well. It seems like it would be a good idea to support this motion as it is, and if it comes that we send this motion as it is addressed to its recipients and we get some pushback or some feedback in response to that, then we can continue moving in the direction and work with that dialogue. But as it stands right now, it doesn't seem like we have any dialogue established, and but that could lead to where in 3 years or something we have no discussion, nothing to fall back on, and can't do anything about it.
and we have to react rather than proact. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Huckman? Or, okay. Yes. Michael.
Okay, I just made a very good point today. The other thing I wanted to maybe bring to someone's attention is that the outdoor space, I think, is really great for spring and summer and fall. I don't want to distract from the program. I'd also maybe want to draw attention to the idea that you really want to preserve that outside space as well. It is good to be warm and warm.
Yeah, I'm not really saying we're going to have the whole green space like building. You know, I think that's why I think when we have a competition for design, we all as grad students can vote for what's the best design to. I mean, that's also something like up in the air, but you know, in my mind, that could be option, like one of the possibilities. And preserving something, the green here is really
essential.
Representative Morrison. I just have a suggestion that for the next fiscal year when we're doing the activity, I'm pretty sure we would all pass, I'm just speaking for myself, I can't speak for everyone, but I would be in favor of raising the activity fee for the barn to $7 to $8 per month. And that would just give you guys additional whatever.
I don't think it's a small amount of money,
but it'll still
help with the running costs, like it's like you know, the heating.
Right on cue, I don't know.
I hope that you're saying that's correct.
I always support a grammatical shift. So is that okay with you, Brian?
Yeah.
Okay. Preston, can you work with Brian if this passes to get the final copy in order? Representative Heckman?
May I respond to the previous speaker?
Yeah.
Thank you for your points. And I do agree that there are a lot of issues that need to be hammered out with the plan of where this is going to go. But I think that right now we're going to be some time before we can establish that plan, and probably a committee to be established on what the GPSA is feeling on the Big Red Barn, if the GPSA would be friendly to special things, would be. So thank you for that.
Maybe to sort of
sir, you may. Yeah.
In the absence of the design, proposal,
point taken. The thing's trustee.
So, I like this resolution. And with all due respect, Matt, and I want to be things here, so I liked it when it was presented 2 years ago as well, and when a similar proposal was presented 4 years as well, 4 years ago as well. And I'm just concerned because it's the same thing over and over again. We keep this conversation going, and that's great, and I'm glad you guys are bringing this to our attention again, because it's starting to get late in the game. And, you know, with the financial crisis going on, I'm just very much concerned right now that, you know, at the capital funding level, at the alumni affairs level, this is just going to be pushed off to the side. And I think what we need right now is some sort of game changer to really get attention drawn to this. And I've been thinking this over, and I'm thinking this over for a while. The GPSA is going to be, the voting body is going to be invited, don't quote me on this yet because the things are not set in stone, to a trustee committee meeting in about 2 or 3 weeks when the board meets here in March. And during that committee meeting is the Alumni Affairs and Development Committee. There will be a presentation from the undergraduate class this year. And they'll be, you know, talking about their goals, what they've accomplished so far, or what they're hoping their gift will go to. And this has got me thinking, it's also relevant to the Ivy Summit. When MIT came here and shared with us that they had a very successful grad gift campaign as well. And I think it's time that we really start to focus on putting our money where our mouth is. The university is not going to, you know, start to pour resources into the barn immediately unless there's a clear, present, you know, structural life safety issue. I've talked with alumni affairs again and again on this, and you know, I'm pushing them. They feel guilty about it, but you know, the graduate outreach is at the bottom of their list right now. And I'm glad we're trying to push it up there still, but
but I really think we need a concerted effort by leadership here in this room, by people who love the barn, people who love all these aspects, right, in student life, to really come together and create some sort of graduate campaign, some sort of Raise the Barn campaign. And I'll be glad to share this next year when I'm still here and my term as trustee is over. But right now, I think to really go along with this resolution, to make this resolution stand out, we need to create the first gift, the first grad gift in our history. And I just actually submitted, with recollection, to submit my annual fund gift this year. And I really encourage you guys to do the same thing as well, because there is a line on the annual fund page where you can give money to grad students. And I think if we can make a really good effort at this, we can raise a lot this year. And start. And it's not going to be enough from us to make this addition happen. But when we start drawing attention, saying we really care about this, the university will start to listen.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Representative Clark?
Mr. Walsh,
Dr. Walsh.
I'm filling up on what Mike said. I like the resolution as well. In terms of the plan is very much in development. The ideas I have is certainly to see a more detailed plan available, brought before this body once again, either in form of a FOI or a resolution. And to that end, you can convene some kind of ad hoc committee to explore this further. I think two issues in this resolution, in the plan itself, understandable uncertainties. You know, this issue is coming on again. For me, to be content with approving it now, just having it out there, versus having a mechanism in place for developing this plan further, as well as working with GPS data to keep us abreast of these issues.
The hour is growing late, and we spent much more time on this piece of legislation that was allocated. So I'm going to ask for a motion to either close debate and vote on this, or a motion to lay it on the table. Any of those would be in order at this time. Representative Alfersky.
Motion to vote.
That is in order at this time. Second by Representative Murgisson. All those in favor of voting on this piece of legislation at this time, please raise your placards. Those in opposition. All right, we will move into voting on the main motion. I'll waive a sponsorship closing speech due to the time. Please raise your placards if you are in favor of the. Okay, those in opposition? Those voting in abstention? Or not, I'm sorry, abstaining. You could vote in abstention, I guess, because it wasn't changed. All right. 10-0-2, it passes. Excellent, thank you. The next is Resolution R9. Vice President Forster has the chair.
All right. Next resolution is regarding the supporting the creation of the Student Judicial Council. So
basically, this is a resolution that was passed by the SA in the fall semester of this year, and I thought it was prudent to the GPSA, since it involves graduate students as well, and I'll let Alex speak on it.
Sure.
Give him a copy of R9, please.
Essentially,
basically the same wording as what you sent me.
Well, the council's planning on doing is trying to get all the different students, graduate, professional students, undergraduate students, serving in a lot of different judicial boards across the district, coming together, and basically participating in a forum where they can share ideas and how to eventually make the principal work better. In addition to enabling all the groups to come together and have an administrative position at the moment, every single judicial board, more than 7 out of 7 takers here on the board, hearing and learning, security from the judicial board, all eventually to the same administrative function. And there's a lot of benefits to be had for having a lot of those come together. For instance, every group has separate training sessions, every group has separate information sessions, and application for info sessions. But if everybody was able to do it all at once, you'd be able to get consistency not across, not only in the student population that we serve on the board, but be able to have a much more powerful concerted effort.
We yield our time for questions.
Well, for that, we'll move into the formal debate. Does anyone want to speak in opposition to R9? Seeing none, we'll move into general debate. Anyone have any questions, amendments, et cetera, at this time? I'll start with Chris.
I have a question. So merging these different bodies together into one judicial council, do you have the other bodies express interest to go along with it?
I chair the peer review board, and that's generally in favor. This is putting, by the way, via a merging necessarily of all the boards together, but more providing an additional structure to help serve all of them. And the individuals in the peer review board have been in favor of it. I've spoken to the JA and the Ombudsman and all the chairs of the academic integrity board. Really, there's been a universal consensus. There hasn't been a single administrator or dean or anyone that's really been opposed.
I serve on the University Hearing Board, and I've served on the Academic Integrity Hearing Board in the past. And, you know, just from, I haven't specifically asked the members about this, since I haven't had a hearing since this matter came about, but of this resolution, but I know that they would be in favor of it, the people that I've interacted with on these boards.
Question. Just to be President Kane, is there a slightly different format that we're going to have here, or is that resolved, or is that resolved, or is that resolved, or is that resolved?
This was the form that it was presented in, except for change the language to reflect graduate professional students. In the essay, I thought that, you know, the whereas preamble clauses were not necessary due to the explanation that was offered here tonight, and it was really an effort to mirror our support of what the essay had done, and that's why I left it in the current. Basically the same form, a very similar wording for the essay, just changing graduate and professional student, and slightly changing it on the Greek system because the essay actually has members that are involved in the Greek system, so it's affirming their decision to handle the Greek system and make it part of this.
Any other questions or comments or other responses? The chair will entertain a motion to close the debate and move into the vote.
So moved.
Ben Hatcher, seconded by Chris. All those in favor of closing debate and voting, please raise your flag. Okay, seeing that. All those in favor of resolution R9, please raise your flag at this time. 11, all those opposed, none, abstain, 1, resolution passes. Before we move into R10, would John like to make a motion to extend the meeting?
So moved. To 7:10?
Took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah, got a second?
Second.
All right, thank you. Next, we move on to resolution R10, which I know we have currently. Thank you. Resolution R10 is on environmental sustainability and strategic planning at Cornell. So this is a resolution, and there should be an attached letter that goes with it. Should I have a sponsor of the motion, please make a 2-minute speech on that?
Okay. This resolution came about in response to the draft outline strategic plan, as well as to the presentation by Professor Lawler and Provost Bach about the last advisory body meeting. Basically, we feel that environmental sustainability has not been mentioned or articulated enough in strategic planning, and we talked about it in the ad hoc committee and decided that we wanted to put together a resolution. And almost simultaneously, the UA was also working on something like this, so they just passed a very similar resolution to this on Friday, the University Assembly did this. So yes, it basically acknowledges the progress that we made thus far, commitments by various presidents, President Lehman, and President Scorton to environmental sustainability, as well as actions by faculty, staff, and alumni and students on environmental sustainability. Sort of just articulates that and says that we want to see a stronger commitment to that in strategic planning. I don't know if Ben has anything to add to that.
No, that pretty much covered it.
A follow-up on the question raised, sustainability, we have an environmental sustainability message mentioned, and we can crack that into the strategic goal of the university that should be mentioned, that we'd like them to address that.
Thank you. We'll move into formal debate. Does anyone at this time wish to speak in opposition to resolution or assent? Seeing none, we'll move into general debate. Does anyone have any questions, comments, or concerns or amendments regarding Arts Van Crescent?
Yes, we made there's some consistency in the grammar submission. We should drop the and the first whereas, the last whereas should have a period after. The second further resolve should have set up for that.
Does the sponsors accept that as a final amendment?
I love myself the grammar.
Any other questions, comments? Chair will entertain a motion to close debate and move into vote. Dave and seconded by Preach. All those in favor of closing debate and moving into vote, please raise your flags. Okay. All those in favor of R10, please raise your flags at this time. Well, all those opposed, nil, abstaining? Yeah, thank you. Resolution passes. The chair is present tonight.
Very good. We have written on here. I did something wrong with the numbers anyway. But anyway,
fix that on the online version.
Yeah, the second two is now a resolution. Chair recognizes Representative Strong.
So we already heard tonight mentioned the town hall meeting was absolutely legal. And Mike did a nice explanation regarding community initiatives, standing documents, outlining concerns and things that can move the graduate community forward in a positive way. And so, first off, I'll note adding a couple more signers to the author to the president who was involved in this, as well as Mike Walsh, the trustee. Does anybody know Mike Walsh? We look at this as a re-examined UCI, which is already a process that we're moving forward, as an opportunity to engage in constructive ways the strategic planning committee and the strategic plan for Cornell, and aligning those two documents and getting graduate students concerned, the ones which are most important to graduate students, which we do feel are potentially strategic plans for Cornell strategic objectives, and to formally invite people involved in the strategic planning process, as well as those who were involved with the original drafting of the GCI to the town hall meeting, and then task the CBSA with providing at the next voting body meeting a resolution with the points out of the GCI which we would feel would most align with the strategic goals for the future.
Very good. Questions for the sponsor of the main motion? Vice President Forrest.
You accept the friendly amendment that under the third being therefore resolved in your listing of things that Chris Porter be added to that list and to mention her above as part of the GCI?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the sponsor of the main motion? Seeing none, then we're still in formal debate. Would anyone like to speak in opposition to the main motion? Seeing none, we'll move into general debate. Is there any point or motion on the floor at this time? It's in order at this time. It's been seconded. Please raise your placards if you're in favor of voting on Resolution 11. Okay, we'll move into voting on Resolution 11. Since you just spoke 35 seconds ago, I'm not going to take a closing speech, Ed. Please raise your placards if you are in favor of Resolution 11. Those in opposition?
No.
Those abstaining? Okay. 12-0-1 passes. Excellent. Next on our agenda, we have a brief update on the potential changes in funding guidelines from Representative Clark.
I'll give the short. I know it's okay, 6 minutes, so I'll probably take about 6 seconds. I've been meeting with some people, including President Nighthawk and others, about potential changes to the activity committee. Two initiatives to discuss. Probably the easiest one, the easiest change to make in the near future is to receive permission from central administration to change the requirement that the activity fee be even whole number to a whole number and 0.0. A small change, the one that frustrated us to a small degree last semester. And the next change is a bit more abstract. We're still continuing to work on this with the other folks that have been speaking to it about. Another vision, including having some kind of continuity with the terms in terms of what groups are that get activity fee funding, having a written record of the allocation they've received in the past, appropriation committee recommendations, as well as changing language in the appropriations process that emphasizes the GPSA not only will be balancing fiscal responsibility, stewards of their decision money, with desire to further further increase, speaking on tender, balancing fiscal responsibility with continuing that the bottom allocation funding process to maximize benefit of increase CO2 graduate community. Those are the two issues that I'd like to speak about. In terms of the next steps, I'll be coming back to this body with updates, and within perhaps the end by end of the semester will have resolutions for potential charter amendment for the most actionable item, which would be the change in activity fee to a whole dollar amount.
Any questions for Representative Clark? Representative Mansell.
Just the word concern is you have to be careful with the timeline because you have presented one meeting prior to the last meeting, so your last opportunity will be the advisory council meeting and
in the voting council meeting?
Advisory. Advisory. You can present an advisory and then vote on it. Does it actually mean that all members present can have to go to the voting body meeting before you meet?
I will continue working with the people that I met with last week as well as involved and I did the outgoing appropriations chair. We'll be a new one next year as well. So whoever he or she is, we'll continue working that as well. The most actual item will be change to the hold on.
All right. So any other questions on that? Representative from the FDA side. Liaison side.
Just letting you know, we're trying to do something similar at the FDA right now. I did a little research on what the history of it is. The reason that they have this rule is because in the past, when credit cards didn't exist and people paid in cash, they wanted to be able to split the amount that people could pay in 2 semesters. So I don't know how technical you want to get, but I mean, there are people that on the FDA who are proponents of absolving the limits altogether, so that your voting council can be as strict as they want, so they don't have to match to a dollar amount at all, as long as it's an even number that can be split.
We spoke with Vice President Susan Murphy and Vice President Paul Streeter, and they indicated that the Bursar's office, we didn't push them on it, but they indicated the Bursar's office was willing to go to a whole dollar amount,
yeah,
but they didn't want to go any further than that.
Okay.
And so, maybe if you'd like to continue this discussion, you can continue with Chris, and perhaps if the FA feels that there's a need to push the Bursar's office even further, you know, we could see if the GPFA is interested in working on that with the FA.
It was just a comment for you guys that was something you wanted to pursue.
But that's something that Vice President Basil is working on? Possibly?
I'm working with Basil on making a whole dollar, but if it's something you guys are like, because you mentioned you guys had problems with this, if it was that big an issue, you could either go for like 50 cents or something like that, if it would make it easier for your, assembly to delegate its own tasks.
The sense that Trump has got from other people here is that, like last semester, we had the so hold on, not personally, but immediately
right
now, would make life a lot easier.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you for that perspective. Liaison side. So the last item on the agenda is not so much what it says right there, but what it says on the agenda, but it's me talking about issues that I have with the current structure of the GPSA. So Chris has presented tonight on a focus that he thinks are a really important issue in the GPSA is this restructuring of these byline funding guidelines. Ed presented an issue that he thought was really important and that Creston is working on with the town hall meeting, and obviously Vice President Gutierrez as well. And so there's a lot of, and then Mike Genkin presented on his survey committee. So there's a lot of major foci that are occurring in GPSA right now. And just so we have our heads around what each of us wants to be working on as we continue throughout the semester, I have an issue as well that I think is very, very important. And, you know, I'm gonna explain my issue, but my main point is that I would encourage you, if you're particularly interested in any of the issues that we've been talking about tonight, like Ed and Creston's issue, or, you know, if you're interested in getting involved in Mike's survey committee, or working on the issues of the byline funding with Chris, I know we have working groups established already, but please get in contact with us if you're interested in these matters. My issue is, you know, ever since I became a member of the advisory body in fall 2007, I've been more and more concerned about the integration between the two GPSA bodies, that is, the advisory body, which the name of the advisory body, by the way, makes no sense, and the voting council. I don't believe the advisory body advises. I also believe that it's billed as representative student government that doesn't really have much opportunity to represent or govern. They are, however, students. And my goal is that I would like to see some sort of institutional structure in place, and this could be a charter amendment, or this could be changes to our meeting structures, something that allows for a better integration of these two bodies. I think we're really missing out in that we're not tapping the knowledge or the opinions of the advisory body as much as we can. I feel that we're not engaging them. I think the advisory body serves as an important conduit of information from the GPSA, from, I guess, this body of the GPSA to the field. However, I feel strongly that we could utilize them in a much greater way than we are now, and respect the fact that they're willing to give their time to the GPSA and perhaps involve them more in the governance of the GPSA. And so I'm just throwing that out there as an idea. That's something that I wish to work on throughout this semester. Again, I encourage you to become involved in whatever issues you feel most important. But if you are interested in seeing what we could do to make the integration of those bodies perhaps more than it is today, I'd be really interested in speaking with you. I'll probably be sending out an email shortly to the advisory body at large. I'm sure there'll be some individuals who have great ideas on that body, but see me after the meeting. Any questions about what I just said in the 2 minutes or so we have left? All right. First time,
Walter. The suggestion that best practices often illuminate how governments can and should work, that we think of our peer groups on campus and invite them to contribute ideas towards changing the governance structures. Namely, SA, UA, ISD, and so forth.
Uh-huh. Very good. Yeah, I will. I'll certainly, if I have others that join me working on this issue, I'd love to work together and consult those bodies, as well as I think I'm particularly interested in the faculty senate structure. Trustee Walsh.
Well, it would be a merit to look over the history of the GPSA, and there, you know, Ari in the office of the town has done a great job of putting the minutes and the agendas from all the meetings back until 1996, 1997 online, and I'm sure there are meetings and agendas and minutes still in the office of assembly with some supporting documents as well. Amy's on your head, inviting us to please come stop by and say hi.
Tomorrow would be good.
And I think a case in point, we spent, I think, a good portion of the last meeting discussing, why do we have, four physical sciences, four social sciences, and three humanities, and three, biological sciences. And the reason for that is actually in the minutes of a meeting back in 2001, 2002, and they went through a lot of debate, analyzed a whole bunch of different options, and decided at that time to basically settle on the instruments we have right now. So we don't want to, I think, duplicate work. I think there's a lot of good questions that do need to be asked, but there's also answers to that questions that may be written somewhere in the past.
And again, if anyone would like to, I think that could be part of a working group if anyone's interested in addressing these issues with me. Chair would look favorably upon a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? Any opposition? Thank you for staying there for the extra 10 minutes.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.